welcome to the Mary Valone Show. I'm your host, Mary Valone, and you are listening to episode 43. Today's episode is part 5 of our 7-part series, and our series is all about what is fundraising freedom and how can I get it? And today's episode, being part 5, is all about how do I deploy my team? So if you haven't been following our series, you can jump back, catch the previous episodes, and start jumping in. If you have a copy of the book, Fundraising Freedom, this is a great time for you guys to jump to chapter 5. That's where we're going to be talking out of today. And I also wanted to share with you, we're just a couple weeks away before the release of the audiobook version. So if you have a hard time sitting down and reading a book, you are just like me. So I am the same way, but I do love a good audiobook. So I wanted to make sure that I made sure that the Fundraising Freedom book was available on Audible. So you can catch that on November 28th, which is also Giving Tuesday. And I shared with you guys before, November 28th is also my dad's, would be my dad's birthday. So I felt like it was a great commemorative date. And if you've caught any of my book, you know that I like a good commemorative date for goal setting. So be sure to pick up a copy when it releases on the 28th. And I want to give a huge shout out to those who joined us on our November fellowship. Once a month, I host a fellowship where it's a free call where you get to jump on, ask questions. We talk about a particular topic, and I post all that information in our Fundraising Freedom tribe page, which is on Facebook. And so thank you for all of you who joined in. It was such an incredible call. We had great questions. We had great feedback, great ideas that were being shared. And the recording of that is in our Fundraising Freedom tribe. So if you're not a part of that tribe, you can jump on, go onto Facebook and just type in Fundraising Freedom Tribe and you can find us. And the recording is there pinned on the page. So be sure to check that out. And just thanks again for those who were a part of it and shared incredible content about Giving Tuesday. We talked all about adding frames to your Facebook page, talked about setting up fundraisers on Facebook. But we also, chatted through different opportunities to use this to raise awareness on Giving Tuesday. If you're not familiar with Giving Tuesday, it is on November 28th, but it's also in line with what's happening during our holiday season. So we've got Black Friday on that Friday, and then Saturday is Small Business Saturday, then it jumps to Cyber Monday, and then that next Tuesday is Giving Tuesday. So it's an encouraging day to drive traffic for people to give to your cause. So if you're not already doing a Giving Tuesday campaign, consider doing one. And all you have to do is just think through, what do we want to drive people to do on that day, and tell people. So jump on social media, start interviewing some of your donors and your, those you serve, and share your message. But I just encourage you to keep your focus on one particular topic and really drive people to one place to give to your cause, or give time, money, or resources for that matter. So, all right, well, let's chat about how do I deploy my team? So we are in chapter 5. If you have the book, Fundraising Freedom, I encourage you to jump to that chapter if you have access to the book. Of course, the book is available on Amazon that you can get a copy for yourself, and that Audible will be available on audio here coming up soon in just a few weeks. So deploy your team. How do I deploy my team? So in the earlier chapters, in the earlier episodes that we talked about, we've been going through Fundraising Freedom. So the word freedom is, we'll quickly run through them. F, focus your vision. R, run your research. E, enlist your team. E, enhance your brand. D, deploy your team, which is where we're at today. And then next week, we'll talk about organizing your ask. And the final of our 7-part series will be make your difference. So if 5 is all about deploying your team, and you enlisted your team back in chapter 3 and in episode 3, then you are ready. You have key members that are a part of your team, and now you got to figure out, during the Enhance Your Brand, they helped you to brand yourself with print materials like we talked about last week, which is all about your personal brand, your organizational brand, your logo, your one-page case, your one-page document, your case document, and then your website. So you should have, by this stage, You should have all those things ready and in play. And now your team is ready to go out and share your message. So when I'm getting ready to deploy my team, I want to make sure that a few key things are in place when I enlisted them. So some of the things that I talk about in this area, it's all about making sure that you have a really strong staff volunteer partnership. Now you may be on staff, but you may be the person who's the lead volunteer. You're kind of like a paid staff member. Maybe you're a board member, or you're somebody who started up a nonprofit and you guys are just getting started, so you may not be getting paid at this point. But using the term staff just means that you are the face. You're the point person to run your organization. So you would be playing the role of the staff. And then you've got that key volunteer that you recruited. That is your team captain, your lead volunteer. And so when you got that person on board, you made sure that you basically were ready to, you wanted to be able to raise them up as a leader so that you could deploy them in this step. And what that means is that you guys had clearly defined expectations for each other. And that comes in a really good staff volunteer partnership. When I came through working through the American Cancer Society, one of the major things that came into play was having this partnership agreement. And we literally had a sheet of paper that said, I'm going to do these things as the staff person, and you're going to do these things as the volunteer lead. And we sat down and we talked through it just like that. What are the things that you want to take on? And what are the things that I'm going to take on? And then that way we knew whose role was whose as we were moving forward. And we both signed the agreement and said, yes, this is what we're going to do. I agree to my half, you agree to your half, and we're ready to run. And that's when we can actually be deployed, because we know what we need to get done. And notice that, I mean, like when I think back through those days, I think through all the people that we wanted to be a part of our cause. And I'll let you know right now, none of those people came on because of me. You know, they came on because of this staff volunteer partnership. They came on because my volunteer or somebody my volunteer recruited brought them on. So it's crazy. I know it's easier to, you know, hindsight is always so much easier than when you're looking forward. So if you've never done this before, I hope that you lean on my experience to tell you that this is how it works. And this is how it will be most effective for you, is that just creating such clarity with your volunteers will allow for a relationship there that'll be stronger than any other relationship. And I think that that's the whole deal here, is that you know what you stand for, they know what they stand for, and you guys are ready to run because you trust each other. And trust is such a huge factor in what we do. People don't align themselves with a nonprofit organization or a ministry without feeling such a strong sense of trust. And anytime you buy a product, I know I've shared this before, but you know, when you buy something, you typically know, like, trust, and buy. So you know them, you like them, you trust them, and then you buy from them. And that is the same process that we're taking our donors through, is that we want them first to know who we are. We want them to like us. We're a good cause. We stand for something really amazing. But we need them to trust us. And the way that the trust happens is it starts with this relationship right here. The trust with your lead volunteer and the trust that you have with every single volunteer that walks through your cause. And when you guys believe in each other and you know, hey, I believe that you got this, and they know that when you say you got something, you got it. Okay. So this is not rocket science. We know that it's just staying to our word, not over promising, and making sure that we just deliver on what we say we're going to do. And so when I have a volunteer who is leaning on me, I take that really seriously. You know, if they need something from me and I don't respond, then that could be a breach of our trust with each other. So if they call on me, I want to make sure that I respond urgently. You know, I respond in a timeliness, I guess. And, but just making sure that I don't leave them high and dry. You know, they're going to match your level of commitment. So that volunteer staff partnership is so 50-50 here. You as the staff person are going to be responsible for, you know, the overall information of your cause. So they need you and you need them, because they're going to bring contacts, connections, and relationships that you can never have made in a, you know, like it would take almost an entire lifetime to make a similar relationship that one of your volunteers can bring to the table. So we want to make sure that we've got this really strong bond with our volunteers. So the key things in this deploy your team, and I hit on this in this chapter 5, is the volunteer and staff partnership, making sure that your volunteers have titles, that your volunteers become donors, and that you are a strong leader for your volunteers. And then the last part is really about giving your volunteers ownership. So these 5 areas of deploying your team, it's all about empowering your volunteers to be the face and the voice for your cause. And if you're not willing to release ownership to your volunteers, you will only be able to bring in a very small group of people that you bring in. So I hope that we understand that is why building out your volunteer team is essential to your growth. It's just like any business. When a business expands out, they start adding new locations. And I mean, think about any fast food restaurant. I mean, McDonald's, Wendy's, Hardee's, whatever. Each one of them, there's thousands and thousands of restaurants. So if the owner, the person who started those, you know, like let's use Wendy's, the person who started Wendy's, let's just say that they never gave ownership away to any of their you know, location managers. They would never have grown. So each location has ownership of their own space. They each have their own thing that they have going on. Now they have guidelines. You can see that the food generally tastes the same. The logo design, the branding, everything looks very much the same. So you can see where we're going here is that I'm trying to create your nonprofit very similar to something like a Wendy's or any one of these franchised organizations, is that you want a lot of people on your team so that you can reach out into different pockets of the community. You can reach out in different parts of the country if you're looking to expand your cause. So that is really important as you build your team and get them to a place where they can go out and they can run and you don't have to hold their hand. So in the book, I talk about Ronald Reagan's quote about trust but verify, you know, that you want to trust your people, but you also want to verify that they're doing and representing your cause well. So you may have to do some handholding at first, but then eventually you start to realize that, man, they've got this. You know, the more I sit down in meetings with them, the more they can say it in a way that's very similar to the way that I say it. And so now we can deploy our team and we can really release them into the community because we have trained them up. We know exactly how they're going to represent our cause. During this deploying your team phase, you may also realize that somebody is not a good fit and that you don't feel comfortable releasing them out. And that's when you pull the reins in. You know, you don't give ownership to those people. You move them into a position where they're not the face and the voice of your cause. So you know that you have full control over who carries the name of your cause and so that you're represented well in the community and beyond. So that goes back to those titles. You know, once we get the volunteer and staff partnership all lined up where they know what they're doing, I know what I'm doing, now we have the clear lane that we're both going to be running in and running together in the same direction. So we're moving in the same direction together. But then when we give out titles to people, this is where we really give them authority to speak about your cause in the community. So if you give somebody the chairman job description, they're the chair of your committee, they're the chair of your advisory group, or the chair of your board, whatever it is that you're building out, now they can go pick up the phone and they can call a business or another organization or church, and they can say, "Hi, my name is Mary. I'm the chair of the, you know, whatever board." And now it comes across as being, okay, wow, like this person has authority. This person has the ability to speak on behalf of the cause. And now they're going to open up a lot more doors for you because they've got that title. I noticed that as soon as, if you ask somebody just to volunteer for your cause, they're going to be like, okay, great. But there's very little ownership that's happening there. They just are like, oh yeah, I volunteer for this group. Well, telling somebody that you volunteer for them is one thing, but telling somebody that you serve as the chair, that comes across totally different. And the reason why I like a good title is really because they can speak up on behalf of your cause. and it takes your cause to a whole different level. So you may or may not feel comfortable giving titles, and that's okay. The whole point here is that you know your parameters. You know where you want to go. This goes way back to focus your vision. If you know what your vision is for your organization, if you want to expand to new locations, then your vision is going to include empowering a lot of other people so that they can take on these different locations. Now, if you don't want to expand at all, you want to stay in the community in which you're in, and you want to have a lot of control over the situation, well, that's fine too. But this all goes back to what is your vision and the mission of your cause, and how do you want other people to understand, and how do you want them to work with you? Now, you tell them exactly how that is based on whether or not you empower volunteers, whether or not you put yourself in a position where you're willing to take on new donors to your cause. But if you're pretty closed door, if you're like, hey, I'm super protective and I don't want to really let anybody in, well, there's a good chance that you're not going to let anybody in, because that's what you're telling people. That's what you're sharing when you talk about your cause. So, which is totally fine. Once again, you know who you are and you own it. You own who you are and how vast and expansive you want this cause to reach. So that's your title section. And then, you know, we talk about volunteers being your donors. When you recruit somebody into your cause, especially that first volunteer, when you got all your print materials together in step four, they should have been the first ones to obviously give input on the materials. They told you whether or not they liked the levels, all that sort of thing. But now they should be the first ones to be asked to be considering what they want to give to your cause. So if they're looking at your campaign and they say, okay, this looks great, I totally would buy into this, perfect. Well, now before you release them, so we don't want to get into the next step and organize your ask without having them consider what they want to do. So how do they want to be plugged into your organization, and how do they want to financially give to your cause? So this is part of the deploying your ask, is that you give them the first right to make a decision as to how they want to be a part of it. So I want every single one of my volunteers, if at all possible, now I'm not going to kick somebody out because they're not a donor, but I want every volunteer in my team, on my team, to have the opportunity to financially give. And I don't even care how much they give. I just want them to be bought in, because they're going to be the first people that are going to go and ask the next group of people to give. And if they're not financially in, it's harder to make that ask. So for them to say, hey, I already bought in at this level, would you come in at that level as well? So it just helps with the process that they are able to give kind of those lead gifts into your campaign, into your fundraising event, whatever it is that you're putting on. So give your volunteers the first right to be your donors. Because doesn't that make sense? If you're volunteering for an organization and you are the one that's out telling other people to get plugged in, it would be silly for you not to be financially giving, or giving your more than just time, you know, time, resources, and money. So that's really, really a great, you know, thing to be considering, is just make sure that every one of your volunteers is given the opportunity to financially give. So then we get into leading your volunteers and being a good leader for your volunteers. Like I said, they're going to match your lead. So if you're not a strong leader, you're not going to bring on very strong leaders. So acknowledge that. Acknowledge what you have the ability to give to your cause, and realize that your desire, your passion for the work that you're doing, most likely you're not going to recruit volunteers who are going to surpass your passion, because they're going to match you. It's a staff volunteer partnership. So they're going to come in at the same level. So how committed are you? Are you willing to take it to the next level? How bad do you want to raise those dollars? How bad do you want your cause to succeed and to expand and to help the people that you serve? So you want to make sure that you bring it, and that when a volunteer steps up, you step up right next to them and you match their level of commitment. And then always kind of go a level above. I mean, I know that as a staff person, my volunteers are always going to be looking at me as the leader. So if I'm not calling on them, if I'm not reaching out to them to say, hey, how are things coming along? Hey, let's get together. Let's talk on this day. I mean, I'm the one that's pushing those conversations. When are we meeting? Let's get together. Let's have coffee. Let's talk about the plan. And so I'm pushing conversation, because eventually actually, once things, the ball starts rolling, it's like pushing something up a hill. You know, you're going to be the one who's pushing your volunteer up the hill, but eventually they're going to start to understand. They're like, okay, I get where we're going. And then they're going to start to push you because this partnership is so strong. So I'm looking for people who can help match my energy and my level of commitment for this cause. Now, remember that at the very beginning, when you are, in this stage, they may or may not match your level at this point because they just came on. So you're going to be educating them about what it is that you're doing and the difference that you're making. So some of these conversations are just all about just education. You're empowering them with information. So start with, hey, this is what we're working towards. We're excited about this. Ask them their thoughts, ask them their opinions, and then you'll notice that it won't take long before they start to drive conversation because they get what they're doing. You know, they get what it is that you're trying to accomplish, and you're both moving in the same direction. So, which then leads to their volunteer ownership. And I think I've shared this before with you guys, but when I first recruited one of my lead volunteers, she was sitting in a meeting with us and with me and my supervisor. And when she made a comment about not wanting ownership, you know, we asked her, we were like, hey, we really want you to take ownership of this. And she responded with, I have so much ownership, I don't need any more. And that was such a red flag to both me and my supervisor because we were like, oh my gosh, this is our lead volunteer. If this person doesn't want ownership of it, we have the wrong person in the position. And I know none of us want to fire a volunteer, but that's kind of what ended up happening because we were starting this thing from scratch. And if I had somebody in the position who didn't want ownership of it, then I had the wrong person. So we did move her into a different role. And eventually she did fall off the committee entirely. But it was such a, like an aha moment in that conversation because I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to deploy you. And if you don't want to be deployed, then I've got the wrong person. So I need people who are super passionate. Like we said, we recruited team captains. We were looking for people who are fired up and passionate about our cause. I wanted to go invite other people to be a part of it. So if I have people who are trying to just do me a favor, I've got the wrong person, you know, and that's okay. You just got to realize it when the time comes and you're like, oh my gosh, this is not the right person for the position. Well, then let's have a conversation with them. They're probably going to be thankful if you tell them or, you know, ask them if they don't really want to take on the role, because if they're not all in, there's no reason why you should give them, they're going to be taking a seat at the table. And especially if it's that lead seat, that just totally is trouble for the weeks and months and years ahead. So identify it, address it, and move on. But make sure that every single member who's sitting at the table really is a good fit for what it is you're doing. I mean, when you're starting something from scratch, you won't know. And I do want to address that, is that you probably won't know if they're a good fit, because how would you know? You've never had anybody serving in that capacity before. So, but when it does become apparent that someone is too busy, they don't have the time or the energy to work on your cause, then that's when you start empowering other volunteers to step up. And sometimes it's just a matter of time before that person rolls off of that position and into a different role, and you can get somebody else in that position. But that also reminds me that we have to have term limits on the people who are serving on our committees and serving in leadership roles. Because if you give somebody this power position, if you empower them to serve as your lead volunteer and you never give them a time limit, there's a good chance that they could stick around for years and years and decades to come, and it can become toxic for your cause. So having new leadership rotate in is so super healthy for what it is you're doing, because you want new ideas. You want to give somebody that lead role position when the next person kind of runs their contacts dry, you know, because people are going to get tired, and you want to make sure that this is always a fresh new perspective. And it's not even just about making sure your volunteers feel that, but you too. You know, when you get a new volunteer into that role, it gives you new energy and new excitement for the work that you do. So as I was going through 1 year to the next, every time I got a new chairman in the position, it really was exciting because that person brought a new theme, brought new contacts, brought new ideas, and it was just a new way of doing things because they were going to bring new ideas to the table. So it makes it fun. And I encourage you to make sure that, yeah, you continue to have that leadership roll out and new leadership move in. And I think it just keeps your volunteers feeling empowered as they continue to stay with your cause. Now, a lot of people will ask me, well, what do you do with a volunteer who's serving in that lead position and then they roll off? Well, I often have an executive team that meets, you know, once a quarter or once as needed. And these are all your past chairmen who know the inner workings of your cause. So it's kind of like, well, what happens if a chairman, somebody who's in that leadership position, has some sort of tragedy in their life? You know, a family member passes away, they lose a job, whatever it is, something that happens that's very, you know, just tragic or whatever, life-changing, and they don't feel like they can serve in the position any longer. Well, now you have all your past chairmen from years ago who are all, you know, still gathering. They're still meeting as needed. So now you can pull this executive team together and now you can say, okay, here's what's going on with our organization. What should we do? And now one or two of those past chairmen could actually step up and sit in that role. So it's so nice because those guys on a moment's notice know the inner workings of your cause and can come back and sit right back in that position for your cause. So this is all about sustainability. You know, when I built out the Fundraising Freedom Plan, it really is all about building and sustaining your next campaign. And when I say campaign, I mean that next fundraiser, that next thing that you're doing that's going to raise funds for your cause. So, you know, oftentimes when I talk about different groups, you have to know your group. You have to know your cause well enough to know, okay, do I need a working committee? Do I need an advisory group? Do I need a board? You know, but what I'm looking for in each of these groups is I'm just looking for somebody who can put their focus on this one area that you have deemed important for your cause. So sometimes, I mean, when I did my work at the American Cancer Society, we had these teams for almost every single component of the organization. So, I mean, there was a communication team. There was a team that worked on the 5Ks. There was a team that worked specifically on the gala, like I talked about, you know, but then there was also a board of directors. There was also a team that worked on the mission side of things. So as you are thinking through, well, what do I need for my cause? You know, think through what is the thing that's the most pressing thing right now. And obviously, you and I, we're talking about fundraising. So I want to see, I mean, in a perfect world, in my ideal fundraising world, I would love to see every single nonprofit organization, every single ministry team have a fundraising group, an advisory group that looked from the lens of the finances. They're able to look at how are we raising our dollars, and they can be so laser focused on the money side of things. So that's why when I talk about these teams and deploying your team, I'm really thinking about who are the people that are surrounding you and making sure that you are financially secure. Because if you have a board of directors that doesn't raise any money, you're going to be in trouble at some point, but I don't want your board of directors to feel so much weight that they don't get to sit in their skill set. You want every member of that board of directors to be able to focus on the area of your cause that's important. So finances is just one component of it. So that's why I want you to kind of break that apart and have a specific advisory group that's focused just on your finances, just on your fundraising events. And you know, your fundraising campaigns, whatever that looks like. And not every cause wants to put on an event. And that's where I don't want you to feel locked in that it's like, oh my gosh, well, fundraisers, you know, every nonprofit has a 5K and a golf tournament and a gala. Well, maybe that's not you. And I'm leaning more and more towards non-events because when somebody is a true philanthropist, when somebody is truly dedicated to the work that you do, they want you to spend their money on the cause. They care more about the results that you're going to have, way more than putting on some grandiose party. But just know that getting your people face to face, it just increases their commitment level because now they see each other. So that's why I do like a good event where we can gather together because we can see each other and we can talk about the great things that are happening. But just know that you don't have to have every fundraiser and every gathering be connected to raising money, you know? So, but clearly when you do get people together, they see the impact, they see the need. It's nice to be able to give people an opportunity to give. So, but as you're building out your team, know that you are going to know your cause best. So everything that I share with you throughout each one of these episodes is I want you to just pull apart what is relevant to you and your people and lock into that. You've focused your vision. You know what you're trying to accomplish. You've run your research. You've looked at all the other causes that are doing similar work to yours. You know your internal workings of like, how do we want to raise money? How do we want to get people involved in our cause? And just sit in that. That's why I want to continue to encourage you to be you. You know, you don't have to look at your neighbor down the street and say, well, they're doing this and they're doing that. Well, who cares? That's them. So you know you. You know what it is that you're trying to accomplish, and I want you to build your team, and I want you to enlist and deploy your team based on what you found works best for you. So just know there's no wrong answer here. There's no wrong way to do it when your people are empowered and they feel such ownership. If they're the ones that are telling you, hey, I really think we should go down this path, well, then you should feel confident because they're your donors. So your donors are telling you exactly what they want you to do. So that's the great thing about this system is that, you know, you and your team are in charge here, and you can do whatever you want and you know, feel really confident that you're going down the right direction because your people are excited and passionate and want to do it with you. So I hope today's episode was super helpful for you as you consider deploying your team. I know many of you may not be at this phase yet, but as you're moving towards building your team, enlisting your team, getting them on board, know that you are going to be in a position where they're going to be the face and the voice of your cause. And what do you need to do to ensure that you guys all stay on the same page? You know, that you can feel so confident that you trust what they're doing, you trust what they're going to say because they're one of you. You know, they're just like, you know, they're your team, they're your people. So this is exciting. I'm excited for you and the work that you're doing. I know I'm hearing so many success stories about people raising tens of thousands of dollars, knocking on doors, being bold, taking that imperfect action. And that's what I want to tell you today is just take imperfect action. And we all, the first time you do anything, it's going to look a little bit rough. You know, it's going to feel a little bit imperfect, and that's okay. You know, that's okay that we are not immediately amazing in every single thing that we do right out of the chute, but it'll get more and more comfortable. Like for me today, I mean, I still get a bit nervous when I talk to wealthier donors, but at the same time, I feel such confidence because I know that my cause is worth it. And I believe strongly that I've done my homework, so I know that they're a good fit. So I'm never going to be in this conversation without knowing, hey, this is something that they're really interested in. And I think that they need to hear this. I think that this is important. So I hope that you guys gather that today. Next week, of course, we'll be talking about organizing your ask. And that is all about when you actually start knocking on those doors. So be sure to jump on and catch that episode next week. If you have any questions, if you need anything, be sure to reach out and jump into that Facebook Fundraising Freedom Tribe. Check out last week's fellowship if you missed it, and reach out to me if you need anything. So hope you guys have a great week. Go change the world one volunteer and $1 at a time. What could your favorite charity do if money were not an object? Most nonprofit leaders say they know what to do, they just don't know how to do it. What if you had a resource that showed you step by step how to raise the funds you need to fulfill your mission? Hi, I'm Mary Valone, author of Fundraising Freedom, and I've raised millions of dollars for charity, and I'd love to show you exactly how to do it and how to recruit the right team to back you. Fundraising Freedom, 7 Steps to Build and Sustain Your Next Campaign. Available now at maryvalone.com, amazon.com, and online at all major bookstores. Get your copy and give the gift of Fundraising Freedom to your favorite charity today.